To the physicians at Mission Hospital, part of St. Joseph Health System, even the smallest, most ordinary moments are sacred. It's time now for Mission Radio. Here's Melanie Cole.
Circumstances that can influence addiction, especially on the adolescent brain, which is still developing and subject more easily than an adult brain to addiction and emotional problems. We all know adolescents and teenagers can be quite wild sometimes, but when they're addicted, it is really a parent's worst nightmare. My guest is Dr. Daniel Hedrick. He's the medical director and co-founder of Mission Pacific Coast Recovery. Welcome to the show, Dr. Dan. Let's speak about adolescent addiction. I am myself a parent of an adolescent, two adolescents, and it is one of the things that parents are most scared of, is that their kids are going to start doing drugs or drink and become addicted, and it's a whole scary world. So speak about it a little bit.
Yeah, I've been doing addiction medicine for 27 years, and basically from 18 years old and up. Well, now with this epidemic of major drug overdoses, specifically in adolescents, we're focusing on that, and our that's what we're going to really measure our success is how well we treat the adolescents. And their brains are different, and that was one realization that I didn't really grasp for a while. There's a prefrontal cortex. There's a part of your brain. It's actually one of the last areas of your brain that fully hooks up. But usually around age 20 to 23, it's your CEO of your brain. It's your judgment center. It kind of tells you whether you should do something or not when you get this wild idea. You have an emotional center, which is one of the first areas that hooks up. So as an adolescent, you have this emotional center that's pumping out all these wild ideas, and you don't have a CEO saying stop. You have the go button, but you don't have a stop button. That's why adolescents look kind of wild, you know, and they do crazy things.
Well, that adolescent brain is wired for risk-taking, and
right.
While it grows during the preteen years, but it's sort of pruned back during adolescence, so that impulsive risk-taking behavior is common, and certainly more common in boys, I think, than girls, but I might be wrong about that. Now, what if they start thinking, well, it's okay, I can just have one beer? Does that necessarily mean they're going to develop an alcohol problem, or some of them are able to kind of tailor it back and say, okay, this was one party, one time?
Well, I think the long-term, the highest risk factors is the kids that have parents that are alcoholics or grandparents. It runs in the family. Those people really have to be watched. But I think the abstinence for any drug, for any adolescent, is really important. I mean, it's interesting how the legal system picked age 21. Now it looks like the biology fits that. The scientists are starting to see your brain really isn't even fully hooked up until you're about 21. So alcohol use or any drug before age 21 affects your brain differently. And especially if you start using it chronically, there's a healing process that happens. And if you started drugs before 20 or even, I mean, a lot of people are starting before they're, 17, that's harder to unwind and repair.
Now, do you feel, Dr. Dan, that marijuana, for an example, is a gateway drug? Because, I mean, kids are trying pot all over the place, and some of them say now that's not enough. They start drinking more heavily. Maybe they try cocaine or LSD or, any number of things that are out there today, ecstasy, all these different things. Do you think that some kids can sort of just smoke pot their way through college and then come out an adult?
Yeah, some people are lucky and they get away with it, but 90% of my patients as adults that I treat that are addicted, 90% of them started before they were 18, and they all start with alcohol and marijuana.
What's a parent to do? How do we know?
Yeah, I think modeling abstinence, modeling the fact that you can actually enjoy life and laugh and giggle and have a good time without a chemical, I think is very important. And and another way to do it is to stress the importance is to do drug testing. They have saliva testing that's very easy. It's not very invasive, not weird like a urine test or anything. Saliva testing is a very simple way, and you can do it on a certain basis, like give them an allowance. And in order to get their allowance, they get to do a saliva test. And that way, as a parent, you don't have to become a narcotics officer or a counselor or check their pockets or smell their breath or figure out who they're hanging out with or what color hair they have, what type of music they're listening to. You just do the saliva test, and they can do all that stuff they want as long as they get a good grades in school, you know.
Now, what should we look for? I mean, should we signs of drug abuse, addiction in our adolescence?
You can't tell. You can't tell. The craziest thing is, like, drug counselors and professionals.
Don't
in the
say
field,
that, Dr. Dan.
their kids are addicted sometimes for years, and they don't even, these professionals in the field, their parents, don't see it.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as parents, we can keep our eyes on our kids and look at their eyes when they come home, like you say, smell their breath,
yeah,
you know, go through their drawers, get to know their friends.
Doesn't
but
work.
None of those things really work. And then it also builds up a lack of trust.
Exactly.
And so then the kids think you don't trust them, and right away then there's this wall put up in communication.
Right. And I did that with my kids. They're now 19 and 23, and they made it through, and now they're talking about it because, you know, I started when they were 12. It runs in my family. Everybody's alcoholic. And so I told them, we can't tolerate drug use. We're going to be doing this. I just put it on the dinner table, you know. Here's these testing things we're going to be doing. And now they say, you know, it helped. When somebody was passing a joint to me in that party, I said, you know, my dad's in the field. He tests me all the time, you know.
And so that really worked. Your kids did not resent you for that?
They did a little bit, but now they say it's great. It's fine. You know, it worked.
Mm-hmm, because that's, you know, parents wonder, should they be doing some of these tests, like a saliva test, you say, is one of the good ones because it's kind of non-invasive. You're not asking them to pee in a cup.
Right. And I think the people, I mean, parents have to understand nowadays, in the United States, the statistics, actually, every person in the United States has much more chance of dying of a drug overdose than a motor vehicle accident. That's been known for, that actually has been true for the last 3 years. When I was a kid, I'm 62, when I was a kid, my whole life they were teaching me, like, you got to watch out for those cars, they'll kill you, even if you're sober. Now, everybody, your kids, you, your family, your neighbors, have much more chance of dying of a drug overdose than a motor vehicle accident.
Wow.
We've got to get serious.
We have to get serious. And as parents, if we find out our children, we don't have much time left, Dr. Dan, but as a parent, if we find out our children are addicted, somehow their grades have slipped and they're sleeping it off and they're, you know, we can tell sometimes, then what is treatment for an addicted adolescent?
Well, it's a little bit different if you intervene quick. See, your question is perfect. It's a little bit off, but that's what everybody's asking. The thing is, adolescents are dying before they're addicted. Some of them are dying. They're 14. And Orange County is number 2 in the nation for drug overdoses, accidental drug overdoses. They're dying when they're 14 and 15. Sometimes the second time they took some. You take an opiate at a party, and they have the Skittles parties where they just a punch bowl, and everybody throws in all different types of pills in there, and people just stop breathing. They're not addicted, so you can't wait for that time.
Wow, that is just so scary. And does the scare tactic work, do you think, with our kids? Like, if you try this even once, you could die from it, or if you ever decide you want to try smoking pot, you could become addicted that first time. Do you think kids are smarter than that, or would they believe that sort of thing?
Yeah, it that doesn't work, and we've tried celebrities, you know, giving lectures, and the crazy thing is somebody's celebrity will have this horrendous story, and then they live, and so there's some of the people in the audience that go, well, if they did all those drugs and lived, then maybe I can do that too.
Yeah, see, that's a world of, that's tough today with all the social networking and everything going on. Kids can find out about these things, and they see these celebrities making millions, and getting drunk and doing drugs and getting off on all these things. So give us, in the last just 30 seconds, 1 minute, your best advice and hope for adolescence and addiction.
I think having a conversation with your kids and emphasizing how important it is. It's the most important thing in our relationship between me and my kids is that they have me. I'm not on any drugs. I'm not on any oxy. I'm not on any marijuana. I'm not on any booze. And I want that from them. There's nothing more important to me that I want a relationship with them. Not the marijuana you, or not the alcohol you, or not the ecstasy you. I want you.
Well, that is great bit of advice, is that we want to be with each other as the people that we are, not as the people that we are when we're on some mind-altering substance. And communication with your adolescent is absolutely key, being close. You're listening to Mission Radio. For more information on Mission Hospital, you can go to missionforhealth.com. That's Mission, the number 4, health.com. This is Melanie Cole. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.